Richard gritted his teeth. His left hand gripped the hilt of the sword. He could feel the bumps of the word truth woven into the wire, and through it, the heat of its rage. I have no intention of killing anyone.
Good.
Keep the anger of the sword out. You are going to need it if you're to survive. They are surrounding us as we speak. That much my Han can tell me. Richard felt as if things were suddenly spinning out of his control. He didn't want to hurt anyone. He hadn't saved Duchailu just to have to fight her people. Then I suggest you call on your Han, Sister Verna. I am the Seeker, not an assassin. I'm not going to kill your enemies for you. She took a few strides toward him. Her voice was tight and controlled. I told you my Han is not going to be able to help. I would end the threat if I could, but I can't. Duchailu has power against magic. I'm begging you, Richard, defend yourself. His eyes narrowed. Perhaps you just don't want to help. You're angry that I spoil the arrangement the sisters had with the Majin Dai. You plan on watching, like you always do, just to see what I'll do. She slowly shook her head in frustration. Do you really think, Richard, that I would spend half my life in my duty to find you and carry you safely to the Palace of the Prophets, only to watch you killed when we're on the doorstep of my home? Do you actually believe that I wouldn't stop this if I could? Is your opinion of me that low? His impulse was to argue with her, but instead he considered her words. What she said made sense. Richard gave an apologetic shake of his head, then quickly glanced into the shadows. How many are there?
Perhaps 30.
30? In frustration, he folded his arms. How am I to defend against 30 by myself? She looked out into the darkness a moment, then cast her hands forward. A wind rose, carrying a veil of sand and dirt outward into the blackness. That will slow them for a short time, but not stop them. She turned her brown eyes on him once more. Richard, I have used my Han to seek an answer. The only thing my Han tells me is that you must use the prophecy to survive. You've named yourself the bringer of death, as the prophecy foretells. The prophecy is about you. You must use the prophecy if you are to defeat that many. The prophecy says the holder of the sword is able to call the dead forth, call the past into the present. Somehow that's what you must do in order to survive. Call forth the dead, call the past into the present. Richard unfolded his arms. We're about to be overrun by 30 people you say are going to try to kill me, and you give me riddles? Sister, I told you before that I don't know what it means. If you want to help, then tell me something I can use. She turned away, walking back toward the horses. I have. Sometimes prophecies are meant to give aid to the one named by sending help across time, providing a key that may open a door to enlightenment. I believe this prophecy is such. This prophecy is about you. You must find its use. I don't know its meaning. She stopped and turned to look back over her shoulder. You forget. I tried to keep us out of the hands of these people. You said that in this matter, you were not my student, but the Seeker. As the Seeker, you must use this prophecy. You are the one who got us into this. Only you can get us out. Richard stared after her as she gentled the nervous animals. He had thought about this prophecy before, wondering, ever since she had told it to him, what it could mean. Sometimes he had felt as if he was on the verge of insight, but the feeling always slipped away from him before coming to fruition. He had used the sword many times and knew its capabilities. He also knew his own limitations. Against one, the sword was virtually invincible. But he was flesh and blood. He was no expert swordsman. In the past, he had always depended on the sword's magic to make the difference. But he was only one man, and they were many. The sword could only be in one place at one time. Are they good fighters? He asked. The Bakaban Mana are without peer. They have special fighters, blade masters, who train from sunup to sundown every day, and then they train by the light of the moon. Fighting is almost a religion to them. When I was young, I saw a Bakaban Mana blade master who had gotten into the garrison in Tanimura kill nearly 50 well-armed soldiers before he was taken down. They fight like they are invincible spirits. Some people believe they are.
That's just great, he said under his breath.
Richard, she said without looking at him, I know we don't get along. We could look at the same thing and each see something different. We're from different worlds, both of us are headstrong, and neither of us likes the other very much. But I want you to know that I'm not trying to be obstinate about this. You spoke the truth in that this is about you as the seeker, not as my student. In a way I don't understand, it's also bundled up with prophecy. You are writing a ripple in events. I am but a bystander in this. If you die, however, I die too. She at last lifted her eyes to his. I don't know how to help you, Richard. There are people closing around us to watch what will happen, and I know that if I try to interfere, I will be killed by them. This is about prophecy, you and the Bakaban Mana. I play no part in it, other than to die if you do. I don't know what the prophecy means, and I realize you don't either, but keep it in mind, and maybe its use will come as you need it. Try to use your Han if you can. Richard stood with his hands on his hips. All right, sister, I'll try. I'm just sorry I'm no good at riddles, and if I'm killed, well, thank you for trying to help me. He looked up at the sky, at the thin veil of clouds that dimmed the moon. The darkness helped hide those who came. There was no reason it couldn't be used to his advantage, too. Richard was a woods guide at home in the darkness of the woods. He had spent countless hours at games like this with other guides. This was his element, too, not just theirs. He didn't have to do it their way. Crouching, he moved off, away from the sister and their horses, and became one with the moon shadows. He found the first of them looking the wrong way. Still and silent, he watched the dark form wrapped in loose clothes, squatted on one knee, watching the sister. Clutched tightly in one fist was a short spear, its butt planted in the sand. Two more spears lay on the ground. Richard concentrated on controlling his breathing to keep from making a sound as he glided closer. Moving, stopping, moving again, he approached ever closer. His hand reached out. Inches from the spear, he froze as the head turned. The figure sprang up, but Richard was close enough. He snatched the spear away. As the man whirled, Richard spun the spear and whacked him across the side of the head. He went down before he had a chance to raise an alarm. One down, Richard thought as he straightened, and without having to kill him. At least, he hoped he hadn't killed him. Slipping out of the darkness, a figure appeared. To the side, another, and then another. Richard turned about and saw more appearing. Before he could move away, he was surrounded. The forms were wrapped in bark-colored loose clothes, so they would blend in with the surrounding country. Cloth wound around their heads hid all but their dark eyes, which shined with grim determination. There was nowhere to run. Richard sidestepped into the clearing as the circle of forms moved with him. More were closing in all about. Richard turned, watching them as they formed two rings around him. Maybe he could still do this without killing.
Who speaks for you?
The inner ring of robed figures dropped their round shields and cast their extra spears to the ground, points toward Richard. Each clasped their remaining spear in two hands like a staff. Their eyes never left him. The outer ring of warriors cast their shields and all their spears to the ground and put their hands to their sword hilts, but didn't draw them. A soft, rhythmic chant began, and the two circles slowly began moving in opposite directions. Richard walked backwards in a tight circle, trying to keep watch on all of them.
Who speaks for you?
The slow chant continued in time with their sideways steps. A figure wrapped from head to foot, like the others, rose up on a rock beyond the outer circle.
I am Duchailu. I speak for the Bakaban Mana.
Richard could hardly believe this was happening.
Duchailu, I saved your life. Why would you want to murder us?
The Bakaban Mana are not here to murder you. We are here to execute you for stealing our sacred lands.
Duchailu, I've never even seen your land before. I had nothing to do with whatever happened.
Magic men took our lands from us. They laid down our laws. You are a magic man. You bear the sins of those magic men before you. You even bear their mark to prove it. You must do as all before, who we could catch. You must face the circle. You must die. Duchailu, I told you the killing must stop. It is easy to proclaim the killing must end when you are the one about to die.
How dare you say that to me? I risked my life to stop the killing. I risked my life for you.
She spoke softly. I know, Richard. For that, I will always honor you. I would have borne your sons had you asked it of me. I would lay my life down for you. For what you have done, you will live on as a hero to my people. I will tie a prayer to my dress, that the spirits take you tenderly to their hearts. But you are a magic man. The old law says that we must practice every day and be better with a blade than any other people born. We have been told that we must kill every magic man we can catch, or the spirit of the dark will take the world of life into the dark.
You can't go on killing magic men or anyone else. It must stop.
The killing cannot end because of what you have done. It can only end when the spirits dance with us.
What does that mean?
It means we must kill you, or what has been spoken of will be brought to pass. The dark spirit will escape his prison.
Richard pointed with the spear. Duchailu, I don't want to kill any of you, but I will defend myself. Please stop now before anyone else is heard. Don't make me kill any of you, please.
Had you tried to run, we would have put spears in your back, but since you choose to stand, you have earned the right to face us. You will die anyway, as have all before, whom we have caught. If you do not fight us, it will be made quick, and you will not suffer. You have my word.
She turned her hand in the air, and the chanting started again. The outer ring of the men drew their swords, long, black-handled weapons, each with a ring at the pommel, holding a cord that looped around the swordsman's neck to keep the sword from being lost in battle. Each blade was curved, widening toward the clipped point. The men spun the swords, passing them from right hand to left and back again. The blades never stopped spinning. The two rings began moving in opposite directions again. The inner circle of men began twirling the spears like staffs. Richard had known guides who carried staffs. No one ever bothered a guide with a staff. These people were better than any guide he had ever seen. The shafts of wood were a blur in the moonlight, the steel points a circle of dull reflection. Richard broke the spear shaft over his knee and drew his sword. The sound of steel rang above the sound of the whistling spears and blades.
Don't do this, Duchailu. Stop it now before anyone else is hurt.
Do not fight us, witch man, and we will grant you a quick death. I owe you at least that.
Richard's chest heaved. The muscles in his jaw flexed as he gritted his teeth. The chanting increased in speed, and the circles of men moved faster. Richard glared at Duchailu as she stood on the rock.
I disavow responsibility for what is to happen. Duchailu, it is you who presses this. What happens is your responsibility. You bring it.
She spoke softly, her voice filled with regret. We are many. You are but one. I am sorry, Richard.
Only a fool would have confidence in those odds, Duchailu. They are not what they seem. You cannot all come at me at once. You can only attack one or two, or at most three at a time. The odds are not what they seem to your eyes.
Richard wondered dimly where his own words had come from. He could see her nod in the moonlight.
You understand the dance of death, witch man?
I'm not a witch man, Duchailu. I am Richard, the seeker of truth. I'm not going with this sister to learn to be a witch man by choice. I'm a prisoner, you know that, but I will defend myself.
Duchailu watched him in the moonlight.
The spirits know I am sorry for you, seeker Richard, but you must die.
Don't be sorry for me, Duchailu. Be sorry for those of you who are going to die this night for no good reason.
You have not seen the Bakaban Mana fight. We will not be touched. Only you will taste steel. Dismiss your concern. We are safe. You will have no killing to regret.
Richard loosed the sword's magic, the rage. The two circles moved and chanted faster, spun their weapons faster.
The storm of the sword's anger thundered through the seeker. Even in the grip of the rage, the wanton need to kill, he knew it wasn't going to be enough. There were too many, and he had never seen anyone handle weapons the way these people did. Heedlessly, he pulled more of the magic to him, pulled until the mercilessness of the hate pounded in his head and nearly made him sick. He drew it into the depths of his soul. Richard stood still in the center of the moving circles. He touched the gleaming blade to his forehead. The steel was cold against his hot skin, against his sweat.
"Blade, be true this day."
He called the magic onward. Before he even realized what he was doing, he pulled off his shirt and threw it aside to be free of any hindrance to his movement. Why would he think to do that? It seemed the right thing to do, but he had no idea where the thought came from. He drew the blade up straight before him, his muscles flexed and tightened, glistening with sweat. He found the center of himself, that place of quiet, of focus. He sought his Han within the white-hot center of his rage.
"Use what you have," a voice within him said. "Use what is there. Let it loose."
In the quiet of his mind, Richard remembered the time he had stood on Zed's Wizard's Rock, to use its magic to hide the cloud that Darkin Rahl had sent to track him. The rock had been used by many wizards before Zed. As Richard had stood on it, calling the magic onward, letting it flow through him, he had felt the essence of those who had come before. He remembered the way it had felt to feel the things they had felt, to know the things they had known. It had given him insight into those who had once used the magic. Suddenly, he knew what the prophecy meant. He wondered how it was possible to have used the sword before without seeing it, without seeing what the magic held. Just like the Wizard's Rock. Others had used the Sword of Truth's magic, and in the bargain, the magic retained a memory of their talents at fighting, of every move in which it had ever been used. The talent of untold hundreds who had wielded this blade, men and women alike, was there for the taking. The skill of both the good and the wicked was bound into the magic. In his stillness he saw the first come from the left. "Be a feather, not a rock. Float on the wind of the storm." Richard unleashed the magic and spun with the attack, letting it sweep past him. He didn't strike, but let himself float with the press of the charge. He let the sword's magic guide him. The attacker tumbled to the ground when he didn't make the expected contact. Instantly, another came, twirling his spear. Richard spun around again, and as the attacker passed, he used the sword to splinter the shaft in two. A spear point thrusted toward him. Without stopping, he glided past it and brought the sword up, cutting the shaft in half. Another charge came from behind. He met it with a foot to the chest, throwing the man back. Richard gave himself over to the magic from the sword, and to the peace within himself. Things he didn't even understand he was doing without thought. He controlled the rage to keep from killing. He used the flat of the blade to strike the back of a head here, used his feet to trip in advance there. The faster they came, the faster he reacted, the magic feeding off their energy. Fluidly, he slipped among the attackers, splintering spears when he could, trying to disarm the Bakuban Mana without killing them.
"Duchailu, stop this before I have to hurt them!"
Yelling at her was a mistake. It distracted him. It allowed a spear through his flowing defense. He had a choice as the rage instantly exploded at the threat. He could kill the attacker, or do only what was necessary to stop him. His sword spun, its tip whistling through the air, and lopped off the hand that thrust the spear. Blood and fragments of bone filled the air. The scream was a woman's. Some of the Bakuban Mana were women, he realized. It didn't matter. They would kill him if he didn't defend himself. Losing a hand was better than losing your head. First blood brought the rage, the need to kill boiling up within him, hot and thirsty for more. He fought the attackers and fought the things within himself that wanted to press the attack to those around him. He didn't want to press the attack. He only wanted them to stop. But if they didn't stop... When he broke their spears, they picked up others and threw themselves at him again. He slipped among them like a phantom, conserving his energy as he let them wear themselves out. The outer ring, who had continued to circle while the inner one had attacked, stopped, and then, swords awhirl, began advancing. Those with the spears, the ones who were still standing, stepped back through the outer ring as it came forward. Swords spun in the air. Instead of waiting for them to come to him, Richard went to them. They flinched in surprise as the Sword of Truth shattered two of the flashing blades.
Duchailu, please, I don't want to kill any of you!
The ones with the swords were faster than the ones with the spears. Too fast. Talking and trying to disarm them without killing was a dangerous distraction. Richard felt a hot pain flash through the flesh over his ribs. He hadn't even seen the blade coming, but he had moved by instinct and received a shallow slash instead of a killing cut. His own blood being drawn summoned the sword's magic to his defense. The rage, the skill of those who had held it before him, their essence seared through him, and he couldn't hold it back. There was no choice anymore. It overwhelmed his restraint. He had given them every chance. He was beyond retrieval now. Bringer of Death. The swordsman rushed in a deadly wave. He loosed the magic with a vengeance. The stalling was over. The barriers down, he danced with death now. The night erupted in a warm mist of blood. He heard himself screaming, and he felt himself moving. He saw men and women falling as disembodied heads tumbled across the ground. The lust for it raged through him. No blade touched him again. He countered every strike as if he had seen it 1,000 times before, as if he had always known what to do. Every attack brought a sure and swift death to the attacker. Bone fragments and blood exploded through the night air. Gore sluiced across the ground. The horror of it all melted together into one long, killing image. Bringer of Death. He only realized he had his knife in his left hand and his sword in his right when two came from opposite sides at once. He hooked his arm around the neck of the one on the left and slit his throat, while at the same time running the one on the right through with the sword. Both collapsed to the ground as Richard stood panting. "Quiet," echoed around him. There was no movement, except for one on her knees, holding herself up with one hand. Her other hand was missing. She rose to her feet, pulling a knife from her belt. Through his glower, Richard watched the determination in her eyes. She ran for him with a scream. Richard stood deathlike in a cold cocoon of magic. The rage pounded as he watched her come. She raised the knife. Richard's sword whipped up and impaled her through the heart. The dead weight of her pulled the sword down as she slid off it to the ground, her last breath gurgling out as her fingers grasped the blade, sliding down its wet red length as she slipped into the hands of death. Bringer of Death. Richard lifted his smoldering glare to the woman standing on the rock. Duchailu stepped down, unwrapped her head, letting the long cloth hang down, and went to one knee in a bow. Richard, his rage burning hotly, strode to her. He lifted Duchailu's chin with the sword's point. Her dark eyes stared up into his.
"The Kaharan has come."
"Who is the Kaharan?" Duchailu looked unflinchingly into his eyes.
"The one who dances with the spirits."
"Dances with the spirits," Richard repeated in a flat tone. He understood. He had danced with the spirits of those who held the sword before him. He had called the dead forth, danced with their spirits. He almost laughed. "I will never forgive you, Duchailu, for making me kill those people. I saved your life because I abhor killing, and you have brought the blood of 30 to my hands."
"I am sorry, Kaharan, that you must bear this burden, but only through the blood of 30 Bakabanmana could the killing stop. Only in this way can we serve the spirits."
"How is killing serving the spirits?"
"When the magic men stole our land, they banished us to this place. They placed upon us the duty of teaching the Kaharan to dance with the spirits. Only the Kaharan can stop the dark spirit from taking the world of the living. The Kaharan is given to the world as a newborn babe who must be taught. Part of this duty is placed upon us to teach him to dance with the spirits. You have learned something this night, have you not?" Richard gave a grim nod. I am the keeper of the laws of our people. It was our calling to teach you this. If we were to ignore what the old words tell us we must do, then the Kaharan would not learn what is within himself, and he would be defenseless against the forces of death. In the end, death would have everyone. The Majendai sacrifice us to remind us always of our duty to the spirits and to remind us to practice with the blades. The witch women to the other side aid the Majendai, so that we will be surrounded with no way of escape and nowhere to go, so that we will always be under threat and unable to ever forget our duty. It is proclaimed that the Kaharan will announce his arrival by dancing with the spirits and spilling the blood of 30 Bakaban Mana, a feat none but the Chosen One could accomplish except with the aid of the spirits. It is said that when this happens, then we are his to rule. We are no longer a free people, but bound to his wishes, to your wishes, Kaharan. The old words say that if every year the one who wears the prayer dress goes to our land to give our prayers to the spirits, then one year they will send the Kaharan. And if we carry out our duty, then he will return our land to us.
Richard stood, as if in a dream, glaring down at the woman. You have taken something precious from me this night, Duchailu. She came to her feet, straightening before him. Do not speak to me of sacrifice, Kaharan. My 5 husbands whom I loved, whom my children loved, who have not seen me since I was captured, were among the 30 you have just killed. Richard sank to his knees. He felt like he might be sick. Duchailu, forgive me for what I have done this night. She gently put a hand to his bowed head. It has been my honor to be the spirit woman of our people when the Kaharan has come, to be the one to wear the prayer dress and bring him to his people. You must do your duty now and return our land, as the old words tell us. Richard lifted his head. And do the old words say how I am to accomplish this task? She slowly shook her head. Only that we are to help you, and that you will. We are yours to command. In the dark, Richard felt a tear run down his cheek. Then I command that the killing stop. You will do as I have already ordered. You will use the bird whistle to bring peace with the Majendai. While you are doing that, you will do as you promised and have someone guide us to the Palace of the Prophets. Without looking up, Duchailu snapped her fingers. Richard realized for the first time that people in the shadows surrounded the bloody clearing. All were on their knees, bowed toward him. At the snap of her fingers, several sprang forward. Guide them to the big stone house. Richard stood before her, looking into her dark eyes. Duchailu, I'm so sorry I killed your husbands. I begged you to stop it, but I'm so sorry. Her eyes bore the timeless look he had seen in the eyes of others, Sister Verna, Shota the witch woman, and Kaelin. He knew now that it was the gift he was seeing. A ghost of a smile came to her lips. He didn't know how she could smile at a time like this. They fought as hard as any Bakaban Mana have ever fought. They had the honor of teaching the Kaharan. They have given their lives for their people. They brought honor to themselves and will live on as legends. She reached out and placed her hand on his bare chest, on the handprint there. You are my husband now. Richard's eyes widened. What? She gave a curious frown. I wear the prayer dress. I am the spirit woman of our people. You are the Kaharan. It is the old law. You are my husband. Richard shook his head. No, I'm not. I already have. He was going to say he already had a love. But the words caught in his throat. Kaelin had sent him away. He had nothing. She shrugged. It could be worse for you. The last one who wore the prayer dress was old and wrinkled. She had no teeth. I hope that I bring at least some pleasure to your eyes and maybe someday a song to your heart. But I belong to the Kaharan. It is not for you or me to decide.
Yes, it is.
He looked about and then snatched up his shirt. As he put it on, he saw Sister Verna at the edge of the clearing watching him, like a bug in a box. He turned to Duchailu.
You have a job to do. You will do it. The killing is ended. The sister and I must get to the palace so I can get this collar off.
Duchailu leaned over and kissed his cheek. Until I see you again, Richard, Seeker, Kaharan, husband.
Chapter 49. Richard and Sister Verna sat on their horses, anchoring long, thin shadows as they looked down from the grassy prominence. Trees meandered along the low places among some of the hills and blanketed others in dusky green. The vast city below lay awash in a straw-colored haze that muted the colors into a mellow monotone. The distant tiled and shingled roofs shimmered in the rays of the setting sun like points of light on a pond. Richard had never seen so many buildings laid out in such an orderly array. Off to the edges they were smaller, but toward the core they seemed to grow, both in size and in grandeur. The faraway sounds of tens of thousands of people and horses and wagons drifted all the way up to them on the hill, carried on the light, salty breeze. A river meandered through the collection of countless buildings, dividing the city, with the part of the far side twice as large. At the edge of the city, docks lined the banks along the mouth of the majestic river. Boats of all sizes were not only moored there, but dotted the river, their white sails filled with air. Some of the boats, he could just make out, had three masts. Richard had never imagined that such large boats might exist. Despite being there against his will, Richard found himself fascinated by the city, by all the people and by the sights it must hold. He had never seen such a place. He imagined a person could probably walk around for days and days and not begin to see it all. Beyond, shimmering with golden sparkles and reflections, lay the sea, stretching to a knife's edge line at the horizon. Dominating the city, near its center, rising up on an island of its own, stood a vast palace, its imposing, crenellated west wall bathed in the sun's golden rays. Baileys and ramparts and towers and sections and roofs, all of grand design, joined together in a complex structure that held labyrinthine courtyards with trees or grass or ponds. The palace seemed to be stretching its stone arms, jealously trying to enclose the whole of the island atop which it sat. Seen from this distance, with the thread-thin streets radiating out from the island at the core of the city, and strand-like bridges spanning the river all around, the palace reminded Richard of nothing as much as a fat spider sitting in the center of its web.
"The Palace of the Prophets," Sister Verna said.
"Prison," Richard said without looking to her. She ignored the comment.
"The city is Tanamura, and through it the River Kern. The palace itself sits on Halsband Island."
"Halsband?"
His hackles rose.
"Is that some kind of sardonic joke?"
"What do you mean? Does Halsband have significance?"
Richard raised an eyebrow. "A Halsband is a collar used to launch a hunting hawk on an attack."
She shrugged dismissively. "You read too much into things."
"Do I? We shall see."
She let out a small sigh as she lifted her hips, starting her horse down the hill, and changed the subject. "It's been many years since I was home, but it looks as it always has." The two Bakaban Mana men, who had guided them through the swampy, trackless forest for the last 2 days, had left them that morning, once Sister Verna was at last in familiar territory. Although he never lost his sense of direction, Richard could easily see how people could become disoriented there. But he was at home in such places of vast desolation, and was more likely to become lost in a building than in dense woods. The two men had spoken little over those 2 days. Though they were swordsmen as fierce as those Richard had fought, they were in awe of him. Richard had to shout before they would stop all the bowing. No amount of shouting, though, could make them stop calling him Kaharan. One night, before he went to stand his usual watch, Sister Verna had told him, in a quiet tone, that she was sorry that he had had to kill those 30 people. a little surprised by her sincerity and the seeming lack of meaning other than that stated, and haunted by the memory, he had thanked her for understanding. Richard scanned the fertile hills and valleys. Why isn't this land farmed? With all those people, they must need to plant food. Sister Verna lifted a hand, holding the reins, and indicated the land on the other side of the city. Farms cover the land on that side of the river. On this side, it's not safe for man nor beast. Tilting her head back, she indicated the land behind. The Bakaban Mana are always a threat. So they don't farm here because they're afraid of the Bakaban Mana? She cast a glance to her left. Do you see that dark forest? She watched him as he took in the fringe of the dense tangle in the next valley. Huge, old, gnarled trees were packed close together, covered with vines and moss and harboring gloomy shadows. This edge runs for miles more toward the city. It's the Hagen Woods. Stay far away from it. All who let the sun set on them in the Hagen Woods die. Many who set foot there die before they have a chance to wait for the sun to go down. It's a place of vile magic. As they rode, he kept glancing toward the Hagen Woods. He felt a longing for that gloomy place, as if it complemented his dark mood, as if he belonged in there. He found it hard to draw his eyes away. Up close, the streets of Tanimura were not the orderly place they appeared from a distance. The fringes of the city were a confusion of squalor. Men pushing or pulling carts laden with loads of rice sacks or carpets or firewood or hides or even garbage wove around and past each other, sometimes clogging the way. Lining the road were hawkers of every sort, selling everything from fruits and vegetables and strips of meat cooked on little sticks over tiny smoky fires in impromptu stone hearths, to herbs and fortunes, to boots and beads. At least the cooking gave spotty relief from the reeking stench of tanneries. Huddled groups of men in worn, dirty clothes shouted with excitement or burst into laughter around games of cards and dice. Side streets and narrow alleyways were clogged with people and lined with ramshackle huts of tarp and tin. Naked children ran and played among the flimsy shelters, splashing in muddy puddles and chasing each other in games of catch the fox. Women squatted around buckets, washing clothes and chatting among themselves. Sister Verna muttered to herself that she didn't remember the squalor and the unhoused multitudes. Richard thought that, despite their condition, they looked happier than they had a right to. Despite having lived out of doors and being a little dirty and rumpled, Sister Verna, compared to these people, looked like royalty. Anyone coming close bowed in reverence to the sister, and she prayed for the Creator's blessing on them in return. The time-worn buildings, some faced with faded, crumbling plaster, some with age-darkened wood, were just as packed as the streets. Colorful wash hung from the rusty iron railings of nearly every tiny balcony. A few held pots of flowers or herbs. Laughter and the hum of conversation came from taverns and inns. A butcher shop displayed fly-covered carcasses on the street out front. Other shops sold dried fish or grain or oils. The farther he and the sister went, the cleaner the city became. The road widened, even the side streets were wider, and none had huts leaning against the buildings. The shops had bigger windows with painted shutters and better-looking wares, many displaying colorful, locally woven carpets. By the time the wide road became lined with trees, the buildings were grand. The inns looked elegant, with doormen standing in red uniforms before them. On the stone bridge over the Kern, men were lighting lamps hung on poles to show the way in the gathering darkness. In the river below the bridge, fishermen in small boats with lanterns rowed through the dark water. Soldiers in ornate uniforms with gold-trimmed white shirts and red tunics and carrying pole arms patrolled each side of the river. As the horses' hooves clopped along the cobblestone, Sister Verna finally spoke. It's a great day at the palace when a new one with the gift arrives. She cast him a brief sideways glance. It's a rare and joyous event. They will be happy to see you, Richard. Please remember that. To them, this is an event of note in their calling. Though you feel differently, their hearts will be warmed by the sight of you. They will want you to feel welcome.
Richard thought otherwise.
Make your point. I just did. They will be delighted.
What you are saying, in other words, is you would like me not to horrify them right off.
I didn't say that.
She glanced with a small frown at the soldiers guarding the bridge. She finally looked back to him.
I am simply asking you to realize that these women live for this very thing.
Richard stared ahead as he rode past more guards in dress uniforms. A wise person, a person I love, told me once that we all can only be who we are, no more and no less. His gaze swept the top of the wall ahead, noting the soldiers there and what arms they carried. I'm the bringer of death, and I have nothing to live for.
That's not true, Richard, she said in a quiet tone. You're a young man, and you have much to live for. You have a long life ahead of you. And though you may have named yourself the bringer of death, I have seen you do nothing but strive to stop the killing. Sometimes you will not listen and make matters worse, but it's through ignorance, not malice.
Since you abhor lies, sister, I'm sure you wouldn't want me to pretend to feel other than I do. She sighed as they went through a huge gate in the thick outer bailey wall, the horse's hooves echoing inside the long arched opening. Beyond, the road meandered among low spreading trees. Windows in the buildings rising up all around were aglow with soft yellow light. Many of the buildings were connected by covered colonnades, or enclosed halls with arched openings covered over with latticework. Benches dotted the far side of the courtyard against a wall with a frieze carved with figures on horses. Through archways with white-painted gates, they came to the stables. Horses browsed in a field beyond. Boys dressed in neat livery, with black vests over tan shirts, came to hold the horses as he and the sister dismounted. Richard gave Bonnie's neck a scratch and then started taking down his belongings. Sister Verna brushed out the wrinkles in her divided riding skirt and straightened her light cloak. She fussed at her curly hair.
No need for that, Richard. Someone will bring your things.
No one touches my things but me, he said. She sighed and shook her head, and then told the boy to have her things brought in. He bowed to her and then hooked a lead line on Jessup. He gave a sharp snap on the line. Jessup balked. The boy brought a whip around on Jessup's rump.
Move, you dumb beast!
Jessup bellowed as he tried to yank his head away. The next thing Richard knew, the boy was flying across the walkway. He slammed up against a flimsy wooden wall and landed on his seat as a glowering Sister Verna loomed over him.
Don't you dare whip that horse! What's the matter with you? How would you like it if I did that to you?
In shock, the boy shook his head.
If I ever hear of you whipping a horse again, you will be without a job after I whip your skinny bottom.
The wide-eyed lad gave a quick nod and apology. Sister Verna glared a moment longer and then turned, whistling for her horse. When Jessup trotted up, she scratched him under his chin, comforting and calming him. She led him inside to a stall and saw that he had water and hay. Richard made sure she didn't see his smile. As they walked across the courtyard, she said,
Just remember, Richard, there isn't a sister here or even a novice who, while at the same time as she was yawning, couldn't throw you across a room like that with her Han.
Inside a wood-paneled hall with long yellow and blue carpets running under ornate side tables, three women waited. They became all a-twitter at the sight of Sister Verna. Sister Verna was a head shorter than he, and none of these three women were as tall as she. They smoothed their full pastel skirts and tugged at the white bodices.
Sister Verna!
One cried out as the three rushed up.
Oh, dear Sister Verna! It's so good to see you at last.
A tear or two ran down their rosy faces. Their smiles looked about to burst their cheeks. Each looked a good deal younger than Sister Verna. She surveyed the big, wet eyes. Sister Verna tenderly stroked the sniffling face before her.
Sister Phoebe.
She touched another's hand.
And Sister Amelia and Sister Janet. It's so good to see you again. It has been a long time indeed.
The three giggled with excitement, at last composing themselves.
Sister Phoebe's round face looked about past Richard.
Where is he? Why haven't you brought him in with you?
Sister Verna lifted her hand toward Richard.
This is he.
Richard, these are friends of mine, sisters Phoebe, Amelia, and Janet. The smiles transformed into astonished looks. They blinked as they took in his size and age. They stared in open amazement before finally sputtering over each other's words about how glad they were to meet him. They tore their eyes from him at last and returned their attention to Sister Verna.
Better than half the palace is waiting to greet you both, Sister Phoebe said. Everyone has been so excited since we received word that you would arrive today.
Sister Amelia smoothed back her fine light brown hair, flipping back the ends that barely brushed her shoulders.
No other has been brought in since you left for Richard. All those years and no other. Everyone is so eager to meet him. I guess they are in for a big surprise,
she said as she blushed, glancing sideways at him. Some of the younger sisters especially.
A pleasant surprise, I would say.
My, but he is big. Richard remembered a time when he was little, when he had been imprisoned in his house by a pouring rain. His mother had some women friends visiting to help in the making of a quilt and to pass the time in conversation. As they sat and sewed while he played on the floor, they discussed him as if he weren't there, talking about how he was growing and his mother had told how much he ate and how good he was at reading. In similar discomfort now, Richard shifted his pack up higher on his shoulder. Sister Phoebe turned to him and just beamed. She reached out and touched his arm.
Listen to us go on. We shouldn't talk about you like you weren't here. Welcome, Richard. Welcome to the Palace of the Prophets.
Richard silently watched the three sisters blinking up at him. Sister Amelia giggled and said to Sister Verna,
He doesn't talk much, does he?
He talks enough, Sister Verna said. Under her breath she added, Thank the Creator he is quiet for now.
Well, Sister Phoebe said in a bright voice, shall we go?
Sister Verna frowned at her. Sister Phoebe, who are the troops I saw, the ones in the strange uniforms? Sister Phoebe's brow wrinkled in thought a moment. Then her eyebrows lifted.
Oh, those troops!
She dismissed it with a wave. The government was overthrown a few years back. I guess it must have been while you were away. The old world has a new government again. We have an emperor now instead of all those kings. She looked to Sister Janet.
What is it they call themselves?
Her brow creased in thought. Sister Janet's eyes turned toward the ceiling.
Oh, yes, she said in a demure voice. The Imperial Order, and you are quite right, Sister Phoebe. They have an emperor.
She nodded. Yes, the Imperial Order, led by an emperor. Sister Phoebe shook her head in wonder.
Such foolishness. Governments come and governments go, but the Palace of the Prophets always remains. The Creator's hand shelters us. Shall we go greet the others?
Following behind the three, they passed through warmly decorated passageways and halls. As far as Richard was concerned, he was in hostile territory. Threat always caused the magic of the sword to try to seep into him to protect him. He let in a trickle, keeping the anger on a slow burn. Sister Verna glanced sideways occasionally, as if measuring the growth of his glower. At last, they went through a pair of thick walnut doors that opened into a vast chamber. They had to pass under a low ceiling and between white columns with gold capitals, before entering under a huge vaulted dome painted with immense scenes of people in robes surrounding a glowing figure. Two levels of balconies with ornate stone railings ringed the circular room. Stained glass windows lit the top balcony from behind. The floor of the room was made up of small, light and dark wood squares laid out in a zigzag pattern. The hum of well over 100 voices echoed around the chamber. Women stood in bunches around the floor and more lined the balconies. Scattered among the women on the second level were some men and boys. The women, all sisters of the light, he presumed, were dressed in finery. There seemed to be no pattern. Their dresses were of every color, with designs ranging from conservative to revealing. The boys and men were dressed in everything from plain robes to coats as elaborate as Richard imagined any lord or prince would wear.
The buzz of talking died out as everyone began turning to the new arrivals. As the room fell to silence, applause started, swelling into a roar. Sister Phoebe took a few steps toward the center of the room, raising her hand, calling for silence. The applause died out in spurts.
"Sisters,"
Sister Phoebe said, her voice trembling with excitement, "please welcome Sister Verna home." The applause roared again, and after a few moments, the hand brought it to silence once more.
"And may I present our newest student, our newest child of the Creator, our newest charge."
She turned, holding her hand out, wiggling her fingers, indicating she wanted Richard to step forward. He took three strides to her, Sister Verna going with him. Sister Phoebe leaned close and whispered,
"Richard, do you have any more to your name?"
Richard hesitated a moment. "Cipher." She turned back to the crowd.
"Please welcome Richard Cipher to the Palace of the Prophets."
The clapping started again. Richard glowered as every face watched him. Women pressed closer to get a better look at him. There were women of all ages and descriptions in the crowd, ranging from some who looked old enough to be kindly grandmothers to some hardly old enough to be called women, with those of every age in between. They ranged from plump to skinny, with hair as different as their dress, with every color from blonde to black. Their eyes, too, were of every color. He noticed one woman who stood near him. She had a warm smile on her reed-thin lips and strange pale blue eyes with violet flecks through them. She was looking at him as if he were an old, dear friend, whom she loved and hadn't seen in years. She was applauding enthusiastically and elbowing a haughty woman next to her to join in the clapping until the other finally did. Richard stood with his arms at his sides as he studied the layout of the room, noting exits, passageways, and placement of guards. As the applause died out, a young woman in a dress the same shade of blue as Kaylin's wedding dress worked her way through the crowd. The blue dress had a round neck, decorated with white lace that ran down to the narrow waist and matched that on the cuffs. She approached, coming to a halt right in front of him. Perhaps 5 years younger than he and a head shorter, she had full, soft brown hair that reached to her shoulders and big brown eyes. She gaped at him. With each slow breath, her bosom swelled at the lace. Her hand floated up. Her delicate fingers brushed his cheek and stroked down his beard. She seemed transfixed as she stared up at him, stroking his beard. "The Creator has indeed heard my prayers," she whispered to herself. She seemed to suddenly remember where she was and snatched her hand back. Her face flushed red.
I'm,
she stammered. She regained her composure, her face recovering its smooth complexion. She clasped her hands before herself and turned, as if nothing had happened, to address Sister Verna.
"I am Pasha Mays, novice third rank. I am next in line to be named. I have been placed in charge of Richard."
Sister Verna gave her a small, tight smile.
"I think I remember you, Pasha. I'm pleased to see you have studied hard and done well. Richard is passed out of my hands now and into yours. May the Creator gently hold you both in his hands."
Pasha smiled proudly and then turned to Richard. She cast a glance down the length of him. She looked up, batted her eyelashes at him, and gave him a warm smile.
"I'm pleased to meet you, young man. My name is Pasha. You are assigned to me. I'm to help teach you. Help with whatever else you may need in your studies. I'm a guide of sorts. Any problems or questions you have are to be brought to me, and I will do my best to help you. You look like a bright boy. I'm sure we are going to get along just fine."
Her smile faltered under the heat of his glare. She smiled again and continued.
"Well, first of all, Richard, we don't allow boys to carry weapons here at the Palace of the Prophets."
She held her hands out, palms up.
"I'll take your sword."
The trickle of rage from the magic had turned to a torrent.
"You are welcome to my sword when I am no longer breathing."
Pasha's gaze flicked to Sister Verna. The sister gave a slow, slight shake of her head in stern warning. Pasha's gaze returned to Richard, and her frown transformed to a smile.
Well, we'll talk about it later.
Her brow bunched together. But you need to learn some manners, young man. Richard's voice came in a tone that took some of the color from Pasha's face. Which one of these women is the prelate? Pasha gave a bubble of a laugh.
The prelate is not here. She is much too busy to...
Take me to her.
You do not see the prelate when you wish. She sees you when she has reason to see you. I can hardly believe Sister Verna has not taught you that we do not allow our boys...
Richard put the back of his hand against her shoulder and swept her aside as he took another stride into the room, redirecting his glare to the hundreds of eyes watching him.
I have something to say!
The vast room fell to a hush. From two different places in his mind, the same thought had come forward at the same time. He recognized each origin. One was The Adventures of Bonnie Day, the book his father had given him, and the other was the sword's magic, the knowledge of the sword, the spirits he had danced with. The memory and message were the same. When you are outnumbered and the situation is hopeless, you have no option. You must attack. He knew what the collar was for. His situation was hopeless. He had no options. He let the quiet ring in the chamber until it was uncomfortable. His fingers tapped his Radahan.
As long as you keep this collar on me, you are my captors and I am your prisoner.
Murmurs hummed in the air. Richard let them trail off before he went on.
Since I have committed no aggression against you, that makes us enemies. We are at war. Sister Verna has made a pledge to me that I will be taught to control the gift, and when I have learned what is required, I will be set free. For now, as long as you keep that pledge, we have a truce. But there are conditions.
Richard lifted the red leather rod at his neck, the Aegil in his hand. Beyond the rage of the magic, the Aegil was only a dim tingle of pain.
I have been collared before. The person who put that collar on me brought me pain to punish me, to teach me, to subdue me. That is the sole purpose of a collar. You collar a beast. You collar your enemies. I made her much the same offer I am making you. I begged her to release me. She would not. I was forced to kill her. Not one of you could ever hope to be good enough to lick her boots. She did as she did because she was tortured and broken, made mad enough to use the collar to hurt people. She did it against her nature. You, he looked to all their eyes, you do it because you think it is your right. You enslave in the name of your creator. I don't know your creator. The only one beyond this world I know who would do as you do is the Keeper.
The crowd gasped.
As far as I'm concerned, you may as well be the Keeper's disciples. If you do as she and use this collar to bring me pain, the truce will be ended. You may think you hold the leash to this collar, but I promise you, if the truce ends, you will find that what you hold is a bolt of lightning.
Dead still silence rang in the room. Richard rolled up his left sleeve. He drew the sword of truth. The distinctive sound of steel filled the silence.
The Bakaban Mana are my people. They have agreed to live in peace with all people from now on. Anyone who harms one of them will answer to me. If you do not accept this, do not let the Bakaban Mana live in peace. Our truce will be ended.
He pointed back with the sword.
Sister Verna captured me. I have fought her every step of this journey. She has done everything short of killing me and draping my body over a horse to get me here. Though she, too, is my captor and enemy, I owe her certain debts. If anyone lays a finger to her because of me, I will kill that person, and the truce will be ended.
From the corner of his eye, Richard could see Sister Verna's eyes close. Her hand covered her white face. The crowd gasped as Richard drew his sword across the inside of his arm. He turned it, wiping both sides in the blood until it dripped from the tip. His knuckles, white around the hilt, he thrust the blade into the air.
I give you a blood oath. Harm the Bakaban Mana, harm Sister Verna, or harm me,
and the truce will be ended, and I promise you we will have war. If we have war, I will lay waste to the palace of the prophets."
From the far balcony where Richard couldn't see its source, a mocking voice drifted out over the crowd.
"All by yourself? Doubt me at your peril. I am a prisoner. I have nothing to live for. I am the flesh of prophecy. I am the bringer of death."
No answer came in the silence. He slammed his sword home into its scabbard. Richard held his arms out as he gave a gracious bow. He came up smiling.
"Now that we all understand each other, understand the truce, you ladies may go back to your celebration of my capture."
He turned his back on the stunned crowd. Sister Verna's head was lowered, her hand covering her face. Pasha's lips were pressed so tightly together they were turning blue. A stout, stern-faced woman crossed in front of him, stopping before Sister Verna. The woman held her nose in the air until Sister Verna lifted her head and straightened her back. "Sister Verna, it is obvious you have neither the talent nor skill to be a Sister of the Light. Your failure is quite beyond the pale. As of this moment, you are broken to novice first rank. You will serve as a novice until such time as, and if the Creator wills, you earn the title of Sister of the Light." Sister Verna lifted her chin. "Yes, Sister Marin. Novices do not speak to a sister unless asked to. I did not ask you to speak." She held out a hand. "Surrender your dakra." Sister Verna flicked her hand, the silver knife appearing from her sleeve. She twirled it, presented the handle to the other woman, and then stood silent, her eyes straight ahead. "At dawn tomorrow, you will report to the kitchens. You will scrub pots until you are judged worthy to attempt something more demanding of your intelligence. Do you understand?"
"Yes, Sister Marin, I understand. And if you even look like you are going to give me any back talk, it will be the stables instead of the kitchens, cleaning stalls and hauling manure."
"In that case, Sister Marin, I will report directly to the stables instead of the kitchens and save your ears what it is I would say to you." Sister Marin's face reddened. "Very well, novice. The stables, it is." Sister Marin paused before Richard, giving him a tight smile.
"I trust that does not break your truce."
She lifted her chin and stormed off. The room was silent. Richard looked to Sister Verna, but the sister stared straight ahead. Pasha, her face set in a scowl, suddenly put herself between them.
"Verna is no longer your concern. Your arm is bleeding. Since you are my charge, I will tend to it."
She took a calming breath as she twined her fingers together before her waist.
"There is a big banquet to welcome you, beginning in the dining room. Maybe you will feel better about all of us after the banquet. Everyone is looking forward to it. Everyone wants a chance to personally welcome you."
She shook a finger at him.
"And you will be on your best behavior, young man."
Having put the sword away, he had put most of the anger away. Most, but not all.
"I'm not hungry. Show me to my dungeon, child."
Her fists tightened on her blue skirts. With a dark look, she considered him a moment.
"Very well. Have it your way. You can just go to bed without your supper like a spoiled child."
She turned on her heel.
"Follow me."
Chapter 50. Sister Verna put her hand to the brass lever. The room was shielded. She took a controlled breath and then knocked. A muffled voice behind the heavy door answered,
"Come."
The shield dissolved. She opened the right side of the double doors and stepped in. Two women sat, each at her own desk, to each side of the door beyond. Both were writing in ledgers. Neither looked up.
"Yes,"
the one to the left said, as she continued writing.
"What is it?"
"I have come to return the journey book, Sister Eulicia." Sister Eulicia wet her finger and flipped a page.
"Yes, just put it on the desk. Shouldn't you be at the banquet in honor of your return? I would think you would want to get reacquainted with old friends."
Sister Verna clasped her hands.
"I have more important matters to attend than banquets. I wish to give the journey book to the prelate personally. and I wish to speak with her, Sister Eulicia.
They both looked up.
Well, Sister Eulicia said, the prelate does not wish to speak with you, Sister Verna. She is a busy woman. She can't be bothered with unimportant matters. Unimportant? It is not unimportant. Do not raise your voice in this office, Sister Verna, the other warned. She dipped her pen in an ink bottle and bent back over her writing. Sister Verna took a step forward. The air between the desks, before the door beyond, shimmered suddenly with a powerful shield that hissed and crackled in warning. The prelate is busy, Sister Eulicia said. If she deems your return of consequence, she will send for you. She pulled a candle closer and bent back to her book. Just put the journey book on my desk. I will see that it's returned to her. Sister Verna controlled her voice as she gritted her teeth. I have been broken down to novice. They both glanced up. Broken to novice because I followed the orders of that woman. Despite my pleas and appeals, she forbade me to do my job, my duty, and because of that, I am to be punished. Punished for doing as the prelate ordered me to do. I will at least hear the reasons. Sister Eulicia leaned back in her chair and then turned to the other woman. Sister Fenella, please send a report to the headmistress of the novices. Inform her that novice Verna Soventrine came to the prelate's office without authorization or invitation, and further, she carried on in a tirade unbecoming of a novice, hoping one day to be a sister of the light. Sister Fenella shifted herself in annoyance as she glared up at Sister Verna. My, my, novice, Verna. Your first day in your pursuit of higher calling, and already you've earned a letter of reprimand. She clicked her tongue. I do so hope you learn to behave yourself, if you ever hope to be a sister of the light. That will be all, novice, Sister Eulicia said. You are dismissed. Sister Verna turned on her heel. She heard the snap of fingers. She looked back over her shoulder to see Sister Eulicia tapping the corner of her desk. The journey book, and I don't believe that is the way a novice departs when she is dismissed by a sister, is it, novice? Sister Verna pried the small black book from behind her belt and gently set it on the corner of the desk. No, sister, it is not. She curtsied. Thank you, sisters, for your time. Sister Verna sighed to herself as she closed the door against her back. She stood for a moment, considering. Eyes to the floor before her, she made her way back through the palace, down halls both opened and closed, both stone and paneled, across floors carpeted and tiled. Rounding a corner, she came suddenly upon someone. She looked up into a face she had been hoping not to see. He smiled in a familiar manner. Verna! How good to see you! His young, square-jawed face looked unchanged. His wavy, brown hair